This is an Area Code Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Richard here. I just wanted to do a quick disclaimer for this episode to let you know that it was recorded well before the whole coronavirus situation happened. So there are probably things alluded to or mentioned that feel like history at this point. Just think, oh, isn't that quaint when you hear it. If you would like to hear a segment that was taken out of the episode, particularly because it was supremely irrelevant in light of the coronavirus pandemic, you can subscribe to our Patreon, because that's where we're going to put it. It's a bonus segment that is almost hilarious in its irrelevance. We were giving Karen life advice about something that no longer matters anymore. So, yeah, find out how the coronavirus solved Karen's problem by subscribing to our Patreon. Here's the show. Hope you enjoy it. We're hoping to get back in the groove now, basically as like work and global pandemic distracted me in particular quite a bit for a few weeks. But I think we're back on a roll now, and so you should be hearing from us a little more regularly. So here's the episode. Enjoy.
Bethany, anything before we start?
Nope, I'm just adding.
Yeah, I see that. Okay. Here we go. Everybody. What?
Sorry. I just repeated you and interrupted you.
All right, cool.
Hi, I'm Richard Clark.
And I'm Bethany Perkins.
We can't stop talking about the Enneagram.
So we decided to start a podcast where we get it all out of our system.
We're not experts.
We're just obsessed.
It's No Chill Enneagram.
A safe space for Enneagram fanatics.
And a pretty great idea for a podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to No Chill Enneagram. I am Richard Clark, and I'm here with usual with Bethany. What is so funny about that? I'm here as usual with Bethany Perkins. Welcome, Bethany.
Hi. Thank you.
Why are you laughing at me?
Because you said I'm here with usual.
No, I didn't. Did I really?
Yes, you did.
Karen Gonzalez, welcome to the show. Did I say that?
You did.
Oh. Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Maybe, well, I should take over just the intro parts.
You think you could do better? I would love to see that, Bethany.
Well, it's like the last like three you've messed up, which is fine.
Three is generous, I think.
I don't care that you mess up, but
it's fun. It makes everybody laugh.
It makes me laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good way to start off, because this show is all about how we're all flawed human beings.
And we laugh at our flaws.
That's right. And people like Karen Gonzalez point them out because she's an eight.
That's right.
So, Karen, tell us a little bit about yourselves, other than the fact that you are an eight. Let people know what you want them to know about you.
Sure. So I am a writer. I'm a bivocational writer. So I do have a day job. I am the HR director at World Relief, which is an organization that serves immigrants and refugees and does other international development work. And I do a lot of my writing in the evening. And in fact, I wrote a book about immigration, and I want to say I'm very glad to be on this podcast not talking about immigration, because I have talked about it a lot and a lot, and it's great, you know, but it's also nice to do something, talk about something a little bit different.
Well, and that brings us to our first segment, nine ways to respond to immigration.
We're going to scrap that segment now.
So the name of your book is The God Who Sees.
Yes, The God Who Sees. And it's, I tell sort of, it's a narrative. The book is all narrative. So it's my own family's immigration story from Guatemala. Mm-hmm. And it's also the stories of biblical immigrants. And yes, I, in addition to writing, I live here in Baltimore, which I really enjoy. All my family is along the East Coast. And I do a lot of traveling, which is really fun. I am single and really enjoy it. And nice. Just really feel like it's my calling, and I'm not sad about it at all.
That's awesome.
That's so wonderful.
And yeah, I mean, I like cooking. I like, those are like my main distraction, you know, escapism, cooking. Reading escapism, Netflix escapism. Mm. Those are good my favorites. Stuff. I think it's the seven wing.
I love how when you started, I was going to say, when you start listing hobbies, you just say escapism after every single one.
Yeah.
Just various forms of escapism.
It's not just regular reading, it's reading for escapism.
Right.
Well, it's either
that's a hard
reading,
seven wing.
It's either reading for research, which is work, right? Or it's reading to escape work. So so I have to like specify the kind of reading it is or the kind of viewing it is. Because, or even travel, like I went to Guatemala for Christmas, but I did a lot of research, you know, for other things that I'm writing. So, yeah.
So we're going to talk a little bit about what it's like to be an eight in a minute. But first we have to like make sure people understand your bona fides. And so the way we're going to do that is with a little segment that we like to call How Bad Has It Gotten?
How bad has it gotten?
How bad has it gotten?
Okay, so Karen, you are obsessed with the Enneagram like us, it seems like.
Yes.
Is that safe to say? Okay, so like a lot of us, it's probably gotten pretty bad. You've probably reached some moments where you've realized, oh, this is bad. Can you tell us, give us an example of that, of just how bad it's gotten?
So I went to an Enneagram Institute training on the Enneagram, and it was 8 days of Enneagram nonstop. That's probably the most intense.
Was this like an overnight conference?
No, it was. Yeah, it was overnight. Yeah, it was in San Francisco. That's when I was out living in LA. And yeah, it was 8 days. We were in this monastery or former monastery. And yeah, we did Enneagram the whole time. That's the most intense it's ever been for me. But when I came back from that, it was like, you know, what you're not supposed to do, typing people and figuring out how to best communicate.
So you learned nothing.
Yes. Yes. You know, the whole concept of, you know, you can't type other people. Nope.
Went that sounds like, that sounds like what happens when you go to seminary. Like you go and you learn all this knowledge and then you just crap it on people immediately.
Yep. Yep. It was kind of like that. And of course, the Enneagram Institute, they do the whole like healthy levels, average, unhealthy. Mm-hmm. So then I came back. Not only that person's a one, but an unhealthy one.
They're like a level seven.
Level seven, level eight.
Did you go into it like not knowing much about the Enneagram? And so you just like had all this new knowledge?
Well, I went to it. I had been introduced to it by a guy that I dated, and he gave me that book by Richard Rohr. So that's the only book that I had read about the Enneagram, and I didn't realize that there was so much more out there. So then I read The Wisdom of the Enneagram. I mean, after I came back from that, I just got all these books. I started thinking about how to use it in coaching because I work in human resources. So anyway, yes, I went. And I do have a presentation I created on like self-care and spiritual growth for Enneagram types. And also like communication and conflict resolution with the Enneagram. I just went into that dark, dark Enneagram filled place.
Has your this is something I've always been. This is something I've always been worried about as a person who was a manager and into the Enneagram. Has has your boss ever come up to you and said, "Hey, like, cool it with the Enneagram stuff"?
No, but one time I was told, you know, I've been reading the Enneagram. Enneagram aides aren't great team players. And I was like, oh no, this is what I do to people. I need to stop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Using it against you.
I know, right?
Yeah.
So yeah. No, I try to keep it a lid on it at work. And I just try to, like, I work, people on my team are a lot of Enneagram ones. So I try
hard.
Well, because they're detail oriented. It's work that has to be done perfect, right? Like, you can't mess up people's paychecks. You can't mess up their benefits. So it actually works out well, but also it helps me understand when they're in their crazy place, you know, because I'm like, oh, okay, this is a one thing that I need to be gracious to.
Yeah, so, I do find that like letting the Enneagram help you lean and help you help other people lean into their strengths, as opposed to like trying to go, oh, you're just doing that because you're an Enneagram, whatever. So please try and chill out with that, is a much more useful approach.
Yes. Yeah. So I found that it does really help me understand other people. And after I came back to the light from my deep Enneagram hole, I started thinking, okay, how could I use this to understand people better, to give them the benefit of the doubt, to recognize where we're coming against each other's weaknesses at times, you know? So that has been very helpful. And it's also helped me to recognize a lot about my own spiritual growth and where I can, because I think even in spiritual growth with the Enneagram, I always thought, oh, you have to do whatever's hard, you know, whatever, instead of leaning into a strength and to a natural way of connecting spiritually, you know, with God. So
That's good.
Has been good.
So let's talk about that. Let's talk about, you've been an eight, probably since you were born, depending on which monk you talk to. So how would you describe being an eight? I find that it's kind of interesting to just ask people like what word or phrase they would use to describe their number. What would you say?
I don't know if I have a word. Commandant comes to mind.
Whoa.
Wow.
I don't like that word because it's kind of negative. But it comes to mind as like, well, you know, it's sort of like a leader, but also a, you know, someone who like sort of rules with a heavy hand, I guess, is what it feels like. But I would say maybe aliveness is a good word. Confidence might be another good word. Because I tend to think of it in terms of like superpowers, you know, how every superhero has their own superpower, right? And it's just natural. They don't have to work at it. So the superpowers for me of being an eight, and for other eights that I've met, is sort of aliveness, confidence, immediacy, you know? So, generally, you know, like in the Enneagram Institute, they call the eight the challenger. So... living with a sense of being strong and powerful, but to assure protection in a world that's tough, seeking justice and being very direct and strong, intense and very, very much action oriented. So those are sort of the really good qualities of the eight, a very natural sort of leadership ability. I always tell people, like, you know, my friend Kathy has these t-shirts that say, "Lord, give me the confidence of a mediocre white man." I think it's hilarious.
Yeah.
But honestly, I feel like I function like that in the world. Like, I have all this confidence. Like, people are like, "How did you deal with imposter syndrome when you went to publish your book?" And I'm like, "What? I never doubted somebody wouldn't want to publish it. What do you mean?
It never occurred to me.
It never occurred to me that it wouldn't happen. It was just a matter of who. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I really feel like that's a gift because I've been able to do things and engage things that, you know, for other people might be things that they fear or they're, you know, I'm really convinced that one of my little nieces might be an 8 too, because she's like that. She just like, you know, does things and tries things. Like it really helped me, for example, learn other languages because I wasn't afraid of making mistakes. I wasn't afraid of looking foolish, of, you know, of the natural miscommunication that comes with learning a language. I just did it. I just pursued it. So that's the really good part. But there is sort of the dark side too. Mm-hmm. Like all superheroes have their kryptonite, right? So mine is just being domineering, controlling, impulsive, kind of suspicious of people, and almost paranoid at times of people being out to get me, you know.
I didn't know paranoia was a thing for eights. That's interesting.
Well, I think there's times when we are kind of descending into the five, which is where we go in our unhealthy place. And so there's this sense of like secretiveness or, you know, paranoia. A friend of mine gave me this pin that says, just because you're paranoid, it doesn't mean people are not out to get you. I'm like, that's not helpful to me. But yeah, is so that's like, where it can be hard.
Is it like you feel like people are trying to like undermine you or control you or just what?
Yeah. So that's what it is, okay. Right? Like our basic desire as eights is to protect ourselves because our big fear is being harmed or controlled by other people. And so naturally looking at people with suspicion, like, is this person out to harm me? You know, is this person trustworthy? Are they going to try to control me? So, yeah. So that's where that comes from. It's not like a natural way of being. It's more of of just always being in that posture of what's happening here. Am I going to be harmed?
Karen, maybe you could talk about that move to five and what it takes for you to get there and what that feels like.
Yeah, so generally I walk around the world with a lot of confidence, but when I'm under stress is when I would go to that five place of being secretive and fearful and sort of holding up in my house. That's typically, withdrawing, but not in a good, healthy way, but more in just like a fearful, suspicious way of not being able to control the environment because that's the big fear of the eight, being harmed, being controlled. Those are the any of thoughts that make me the angriest. It's the ones that are like, the ones that say, maybe you can let your guard down because maybe people are okay. So that's what happens for me. But it's interesting because I believe that place of stress can also be a really good place because, you know, the thing about fives is they do a lot of deep dive research. They are observant. They pay attention. And they spend time alone, but in a way that's productive to them, right? And so that's been good for me with writing because writing is a solitary activity. So, and I'm an extrovert, you know, many eights are extroverts, not all, but many. And so being alone with ideas and thoughts has been a good thing also about the being sort of being in the five place. That's like the healthy part of it. But in general, I think people tend to think I'm very independent and don't need people. And I mean, that's sort of something that you project, that you're strong and independent and don't need people. But it's another way to have control, right? To not yeah. to sort of exude that.
Do you feel differently? Like, I mean, 5 and 8s are both pretty independent numbers. Like, the, from my perception anyway, like it feels like an 8 is about kind of getting people to do what you need them to do. And then 5s would just be about sort of withdrawing and they're happy by themselves most of the time. So do you ever feel that feeling of like, man, I actually do need other people?
I do, but okay, if I'm not in a good place, it's like I need other people to fulfill these goals. You know,
that's
where it's really unhealthy, where people become sort of objects that are serving my ultimate goals.
Right.
Versus, you know, there is a healthy part, right, of also caring about people that are the underdogs that need protection and wanting to lift them up. So that's the good part. But there's a negative part too. And also one of the things about being an 8 is that I'm not usually aware of what people think about me or I'm not aware of it because I don't spend a lot of time thinking about it. And also I don't need as much approval from other people as other types, I think. So, and I mean, this is just something I hear because, for example, you know, my housemate says, oh my gosh, when you're not home, I just like watch way too much TV. But when you're here, I just think, oh man, I can't do that. You know, she's going to judge me. And I'm like, oh no, I wouldn't even care. I said, do you know, it never enters my mind. I said, also, I said, when I have my Netflix binge-a-thons, I never think, oh my goodness, she's going to judge me. I just, you know, do what I'm going to do.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So, this is why I'm so jealous of 8s. Like,
no kidding.
Literally, what would it be like to not be consumed by what other people think about
everything
I ever do?
But it can't be bad, right? Because on the one hand, it's good to a point, but we do need to care about the way, and sometimes I can be like a bull in a china shop too, of just not noticing all the destruction because I'm less aware of my impact on other people. Like I used to share an office with a team member and I had to finally become aware of my energy because when I was mad about something at work, like that energy would take over our whole office and it would impact her too, you know?
Yeah.
We don't suffer quietly and in silence.
Yeah, how does that work? Are you just like slamming drawers and stuff, throwing staplers
and
around
the
room?
I just think being very expressive because I think many 8s like me were like more like a firecracker than a volcano. You know, like a volcano brews and brews and brews and one day it just explodes, right?
That's where a 9.
That's a 9. Right. And I grew up with a 9. Yeah. That's my brother. But I'm an 8, so I just have small explosions constantly, you know, like a firecracker. I would like... explosions, but that aren't that big of a deal. And so, so to me, it's just like a, just like letting things out. But now I've learned, that energy takes over. So when I'm in that place, I need to go for a walk or I need to go be alone, let that out in some other way, because I do have to care about other people, right? And I do need to care about the way this energy can affect them. So
I will say though that some of my favorite like experiences with other people, I don't know, that's a pretty broad category, but like I look back really fondly on these experiences with 8s where we've been on the same page in terms of ultimate goals, right? Like where if you're on the same team of an 8, you are set for life. You know what I mean? Like as long as you're on their team, they're going to take care of you and you're going to be happy that you're with them. And there's something really fulfilling about that, you know, which I think is why Commandant makes a lot of sense to me because, you know, that's someone who's leading your troop or whatever. I don't know warfare language, but who's leading you into battle. And it's like the stakes are so high. You desperately want someone who's just going to tell you what to do and know for a fact that they know what they're doing and that they're on your side. That's useful, I think.
Yeah.
And something, And like so much we talk badly about warfare mentality, but warfare is a real thing, you know, literally and figuratively. I think it's a thing that we have to do sometimes. And I slink away from that stuff easily. And I need someone else who doesn't, I think.
Yeah, it's true. And I think, too, there's like a sort of like a lot of projects just require a certain like determination, right? To just do it and get it done and have sort of a steely determination to do it. But that can sometimes also intimidate other people. And I used to be a teacher. I was a high school. That was my first career as a high school teacher. And students would say that to me, that they were really intimidated. And I'm like, why? like when I was less self-aware, I didn't understand that I had this sort of layer of emotional armor. But there is like sort of hard shell, soft core. To a lot of aides of being secretly very sentimental. And so one of my favorite things to do is to go to the movies by myself, because if other people are there and it's like a sad movie, I'm just afraid that I won't be able to really enter into the emotional space, you know, because I'll be conscious of, I don't want to cry in front of these people, no matter who they are. So, yeah. So I think crying and being vulnerable is really hard. Because I've had times too, you know, I preach, and I've had times when, you know, I practice a sermon quite a bit before I preach. And then sometimes when I'm giving the sermon, sort of the emotions of that space take over, and I've cried sometimes, you know, with sharing something and I feel like I'm gonna die. Like I just leave immediately after church, 'cause I just feel so like, so it's a really difficult, that's a hard part of being an aide. I think even though I know it's safe and I know it's fine, having sort of that, all that emotional armor come down and being vulnerable is really hard. And I think that's part of not wanting to be harmed, right? Or controlled by other people. If you show people your vulnerability, that they can harm you. But also there's no relationship without any kind of vulnerability. So, then how do you manage that fear. So
totally. Well, one of the things that we do before we have guests on is we ask them if there's like anything in particular they'd like to talk about. We get all kinds of weird answers to this question. This one's not weird so much as just fascinating. I think Bethany and I had been looking for a way to talk about this question for a while. So you said how the Enneagram might look a little different for people of color or for those with a particular social conditioning.
Yes.
So let's talk about that. Tell me a little bit about, like, I guess first, why you wanted to talk about this.
Well, okay. So being in church circles, I have noticed that a lot of women tell me that they're twos.
Yes.
And I do think it is possible to be a woman in the church and be a two. In fact, I know some. But I also think that a lot of women are conditioned toward behaving like a two, being like thinking about other people's needs and serving other people and making sure there's coverage for the nursery and the Sunday school class, and that they're doing the hospitality for coffee hour. And so I do think sometimes your social conditioning can make you either want to be a two or maybe feel like you are a two, like that's the ideal, you know, sort of woman or something. So I have seen that, and I have seen it with men too, who, you know, think that being a one or a three or an eight, you know, is sort of the ideal. Three and eight especially, right? The achiever, the leader. So I hear that sometimes, and whenever people tell me that, I'm like, huh, that's interesting. We'll see, you know, I'm going to observe and see.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I think that that's part of it. I do think, of course, I believe there are, you know, men and women, we can all be all types, right? But I have seen that. The other issue, I think, when you're a person of color, so I've seen, like, for example, my brother is a nine. And he is an introvert, but it looks very different to be an introvert in a Latino family, because one, we don't spend a lot of time in our bedrooms. They're just for sleeping. So there's not this whole sense. I remember when I was a kid just being really intrigued by the way that a lot of my peers just love their rooms and decorating their rooms and being in their rooms. Well, we spent all our time like in the living room, in the kitchen, you know, in the family space. And so like my brother, I just remember, you know, he was a big baseball card collector when we were kids. And, you know, my sister and I would be playing or we'd be watching TV and he'd be there with us, but he'd be in the world of baseball cards, you know, in the same space. And he was in an introverted space, you know, that was, but he was still with us, even though, you know, because I remember actually like the few times he would go into his room or when we were kids, our room to do things by himself, my parents would be like, I don't understand why he wants to be alone. What's wrong? We need to take him to a psychologist. You know?
Oh, no.
Because it's a very extroverted culture, but he's definitely an introvert. And of course, after he became an adult and could make his own choices, I saw the way that they looked very different for him. And even today, he will still do that. He'll be in a common space, but he'll be sort of in his own project or in his own world, but he won't go off alone to do that. So
what do you know what number he is?
He's a 9.
Okay. Yeah. I guess that makes sense. I just wish I could do that. Like I'm an introverted 4 and I feel like I'm incapable of doing that. You know what I'm saying? Like when you're describing
you
like never going to the rooms. Yeah, I would be miserable in a family like that because, and in fact, I kind of am right now because I have 2 young kids, so I can never escape them. And it's kind of a nightmare in a sense. I mean, obviously, I love them and stuff, but eventually, you just got to get out of there.
Yeah.
And it's very like I could never imagine like, okay, I'm over here like just reading a book and not being extremely conscious of what is going on around.
Yeah. Nines can detach from their surroundings in a way that other people cannot, I think.
Yeah. Because they go to their inner sanctum, right? To their happy place.
Yeah.
But it also does, it does, I do wonder, like, if I'd grown up in that environment, would I be better at it just because of that social conditioning?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. You grew up an only child, so you...
Yes.
Never had to do that in your life.
Yes. Can we just, I feel like we need to start at the beginning and we kind of, I joked about this, but there is that nature nurture question. Like, is someone born a number or is someone made a number? And I'm realizing now that I haven't really paid attention to this discussion in the Enneagram world. Mm-hmm. So does anyone know if the Enneagram world is like landed on one of those answers?
I have heard Suzanne Stabile talk about it, and she's
so it's
she's
canon, whatever she says.
Yeah, no, I mean there isn't like an answer that everyone has agreed upon, as far as I know, because how would we know? But Susanna's nurture, she says that we're born our numbers.
That's nature.
Nature. That's what I meant. I don't know. I feel like I'm nurture personally. Like, I think that the things that happen to us and like our childhood wounds and things like that really form our number.
What do you think, but, Karen?
Yeah. So the Enneagram Institute, they said the same thing Suzanne Stabile said, that they think you're born a type. Mm-hmm. But they did say... also that a lot of your childhood sort of determines what it's going to look like for you to be an 8, right? There's all kinds of different 8s. You know, Martin Luther King was an 8, and they also think Stalin was an 8, you know? So or
slightly,
you know,
different. Yeah.
Or Donald Trump, right? And so what it's going to look like is determined by that. And so I do wonder about if it's a combination of both, or, you know, because they said you are born a type and that doesn't change throughout your life, but certainly life influences can shape that.
It's an important question, right? When we're talking about this, because say women are conditioned to think they're a 2, if it's nurture, that would mean they're conditioned to be twos fundamentally. Yeah. Like, I mean, so I feel like I've wondered sometimes, if people, this is me speaking out of like, I'm almost hesitant to say this, and maybe we'll
just
edit
go
it out.
For
so
it.
Just be gentle.
Yeah.
I've wondered at times if people who grew up in African American neighborhoods, like, were more likely to be sixes, just because of different aspects of the way that they tended to grow up.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
or just yeah.
Well, you know, a lot of like Latino and African American people tend to get typed as extroverted types, the three, mm-hmm. the eight, the seven.
Mm-hmm.
But this is where I wonder how much of it is our cultures and the way that we are socialized in our families, if it's just different. And so being a type four in that environment looks different. Like, I have a friend who is a type four. As a matter of fact, I have a lot of four friends, and I used to wonder about that, and then mm-hmm. the Enneagram mm-hmm. Institute, they said fours and eights are very naturally drawn to each other because
totally.
There's
yes.
introverted intensity versus extroverted intensity, and so there's mm-hmm. a sense mm-hmm. of both feeling like we don't fit in the world, and so I have a lot of four friends, and you know, my four friends that are Latinas like me, they're extroverted, and they're not, you know. It's interesting because I have American four friends as well who, and I mm-hmm. dated a couple of fours, and they needed a ton of time alone and a ton of, so I do think that must affect the way that you, that it shows up in the world, you know,
mm-hmm.
yep.
according to your culture and, according to how you were socialized in your family. So yeah. And it's true. I think, to when I was a kid, my parents were really afraid of immigration, right? And so that sort of breeds a little sort of natural suspicion of the outside
right.
world.
Mm, yeah.
So, yeah, right. In a sense of like, we are us, we speak Spanish, we're like this, but the outside world, it can be dangerous. It can be. So there's a sort of a natural kind of fear they gave about the outside world, and
sure
they did it to protect us, right? So but I remember even when we were little, because my parents had to work, and they would say, you have to stay in the house and don't go play outside, because in the United States, you know, people come and take away children from parents because kids were home
gosh.
alone.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
or like
yeah.
same thing with Halloween, they're like, yeah, Americans yeah. sometimes poison candy, and you know, so it was a very natural
yep, that'll
fear
make
we had
you
about,
distrustful
right distrustful of the outside world, right? Which kind
yeah.
of breeds a little six suspicion, a little six energy there.
Yeah.
So
but
yeah.
even as I'm thinking about it, there are a lot of different ways to react to that. Like, it's kind of a wild card, like how a kid reacts to that, and it
yeah.
does bring me back to like that is where your number comes in, because that kind of thing, like, you could imagine a kid going, they can't do that to me. Like, I'm going to do what I want, and I don't care how they, what they try and do or whatever, you know, they're like, there's all kinds of different ways, or just
yeah.
getting in your feelings about it, which is what I would have done.
Yeah.
I think, like, why do I not belong in this space? I think is what my reaction would have been, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, that's mainly for me what I've seen. And I have a lot of Asian American friends who tell me they get mm-hmm. overtyped as the types that are more likely to what is that word when they were sort of bend with the environment and go along, you know,
more adaptable.
Yeah, more like adaptive, compliant types. That's it. That's the word I was looking
yeah.
for. And so they said they get overtyped there as being, you know, sort of the twos and the ones that are more likely to just go with the flow and not make waves,
mm-hmm.
to be kind of quiet and not, you know. So yeah. And I have a good friend who's an Asian American woman who's an eight, but she says that people frequently are like, oh, just expecting her to be a super quiet and timid kind of person. So, and then people sort of treat her that way. You know what I mean? People begin regarding with her that way. So, so I do think that the way that other people respond to you, you know, I have a good friend who's African American, and she's super like introverted, gentle person. But she is super afraid of being typed as an angry black woman because she says, I get that all the time. And I'm like, you? I'm like, you're like the gentlest person I know. She's like, I know, but I get that all the time where people will say, oh, you scared me. Or, you know, and I'm in a space and they'll say that. And I'm just like, what? So,
yeah.
So I do think that there are certain ways that we have stereotyped certain cultures, right? And that it can also affect, not just affects the way that we view them, but the way that they perceive themselves. So I do meet a lot of people that are Latino and Black who tell me that they're the extroverted types, you know, and sometimes that's true. And sometimes I'm like, oh, that's interesting because I don't see that. But again, only people can type themselves. We can't know for sure, but
yeah.
So it's just something that I have noticed in people. A lot of women who are strong and who are eights in the church will tell me that they're not. It's almost like that's the bad type for a woman to be. And certainly Richard Rohr thinks that. When I read his book, I was like, he does not like eights.
Oh, really?
It just seemed to me like, like he just has.
I think I've heard that before. Yeah.
Yeah. The good
girls. I've heard he's harsh towards eights.
He's pretty harsh toward eight. And he talks a lot about eight women in his book.
Interesting.
In that life can be hard if you're an eight woman. But anyway, yeah. And so, and I've seen, because I think there's also like a perception that eights are not going to be feminine or not going to be servants or soft. Well, actually our natural area of growth, right? Our area of integration is toward two, but
yeah.
So I'm just interested in that. So whenever I meet women in the church who tell me, I've done Enneagram workshops sometimes and they'll tell me, oh, I'm a two. I'm like, you could be
suspicious.
We'll see. Kind of watching.
So it's so interesting to me because so much of this is just making me realize how big of a part like actual projection plays in all of this. You talked about stereotyping, but I think like the follow through is not just what I assume about someone, but then what I assume I would be like or what my reaction would be and how I would respond, like number wise to those things. And I feel like so much of it, like the confusion around this stuff, like is, you know, if I were a woman, I would, I assume I would think in this way. And that's why you're probably a two, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I just think it's an interesting things to think about in terms of typing ourselves and other people, because I think it's just natural to want to understand people and to think about, you know, what their type might be. So I just have found that as I've done workshops in churches and in Christian spaces, how frequently that comes up and how frequently men tell me that they're a three or an eight. And it'll be, you know, someone who is kind of withdrawn and quiet and, you know, but I'm like, okay. Sure.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of more masculine, right? And more manly to be a three or an eight. So it's something I've thought about just in the way that our social conditioning and our culture can look different. With the Enneagram and that we may not even understand that, right? Because there's like a one way of thinking about whenever I do a workshop, I always introduce each type with a fictional character. And the one I use for the eight is always Princess Leia because, she's like a very natural leader and very determined, but also a woman, right? And people might expect me to use a man. And when I introduce the two, I introduce it with not Fred Rogers himself, but the character that he portrayed in the show. You know, this very soft and gentle person who cares about children and their well-being, right? So just to try to sort of come at those like stereotypes about men can't be twos or women can't be eights.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. We did a whole episode on which type Mr. Rogers was, and we did not land on two, I believe.
We didn't.
So sorry about that.
Oh no! I just
well,
think
she's saying his character might be wrong in the about show, though.
I think the
person, that's true. That's a good point.
The character he portrays on the Mr. Rogers show might be a two because he just really cares about children and their needs. But I think him, Fred Rogers, the person, maybe was a one or a nine. I don't know.
Okay, so there we are.
Yeah.
That's kind of where we landed.
That All is.
Right, we're fine. We're fine. Okay.
It's okay. So, we don't have to get in a fist fight today.
Let's focus our aggressions on something that deserves it, the Enya thought. So it's time to do a segment we like to call Bleep You Enya Thought.
Bleep You Enya Thought. You think you know me, but you don't.
Okay. So this is where we share an Enya thought that really made us angry. Bethany, do you want to start?
Yeah. This is one that I got today, and it actually it feels fitting for what we just talked about. It says, "Today, notice if you are like the stereotypical Jewish mother who cannot... who cannot do enough for others, forever feeding people, both literally and emotionally."
Why? Who made that decision?
Way to racially stereotype.
You can't just add the word stereotypical in front of something and
Jewish
it's like fine.
Mother. Yeah. Yep.
Whoa, that is cold and just really mean to Jewish mothers too.
Super
problematic.
Super problematic.
Those Jewish mothers, they just can't stop feeding people.
Oh,
so don't
gosh.
Be like that.
Don't be like those people.
Oh my gosh. Jeez. Yeah. That one was really special.
Karen, do you have one ready?
Yes. So my one for today really made me mad too.
Mine's from today too. They just went ham on us today.
Yeah. They really went after all of us today. So much for Sabbath. They said, "Today, notice if you are throwing your weight around to control the environment and make it a reflection of yourself, a testament to your willpower and greatness."
Whoa.
So, yeah.
Wow.
That one really, really annoyed me. But
mine's the same one for the same day, but it's frustrating in a different way, I think. Because I read it as a threat.
Oh my God.
Today, notice if you are becoming more reserved, more shy, and too private. What are you afraid of having exposed?
Oh, geez.
So that sent my head down a rabbit hole. I'm like, wait a minute. What am I afraid of having
Because
exposed?
We have your Google search history.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Man. That's messed up. Now I'm curious what the number. I also get type three just because that's my wing.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
I'm curious if they have some problematic
for
stereotype
today.
In there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, three's fine. Three's got off easy today.
See? And they need That's the weird. Most indictment, if you ask me.
Amen. They think they're so great. Literally.
Yes. Literally.
Okay. So our next segment is called Let's Type the Good Place. That's a show that just went off the air. Did you guys like the finale? How did we feel about the finale?
I liked it.
I really did like it. I thought it was a good way to, you know, kind of end on a mystery note because you don't know what happens to them once they cross over, right?
Yeah,
but
I
did
so.
Like it.
I did not really like it. I thought it was fine at first. And then the more I thought about it, the more I was like, you know, something didn't click with me there. And I couldn't quite put my finger on it, but I just
It was
just
like... To me, it didn't really hugely disappoint me. Mm-hmm. So that's good, but it wasn't like, oh my gosh, the best
right.
series finale I've ever seen. I thought it was sad though. Like I cried but finales are sad.
I didn't feel anything, guys.
Oh, I
felt
did.
Zero feelings.
Yeah.
Huh.
I don't know why. I didn't have feelings either, but I just enjoyed the whole arc of the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just a good show.
All right. Well, I did really. I'm looking at the cast list and the pictures of these people again, and I am agreeing with you. It's a freaking great show. That show's mm-hmm. amazing. Yeah. Like, I'm just remembering that I love these people. So let's talk about them. Kristen about them. Bell.
Eleanor.
What do you guys think? Eleanor. Shell Strop.
Okay. So Eleanor, I really think she had this great character development arc from being an 8.
Yes.
To being a 2. To caring about other people. To yes. championing other people. But yes. she was still... a lot of 8 tendencies, right? She was still a leader and she was still, but you know, even like showing vulnerability, that really mm-hmm. was so interesting to me from the beginning of being hyper independent and mm-hmm. then at the end
and she's
not
always
wanting,
so confident yeah,
yes and not wanting Chidi to leave the good place to stay with her
yeah
to show that yeah. kind of like need of another human being
yes
and, you know
yes
yeah.
so I really
I
felt
wonder like it's I think that's a good insight, and I wonder, it will be interesting as we go through these to see if the pattern continues, because you would think when you go to heaven, you don't go into stress, that's for sure, and you would think right. you would go into growth. Mm-hmm. So did these yeah. characters sort of like their arcs lead them into their growth number ultimately? Mm-hmm.
I definitely think Eleanor is an 8 and that we saw her integrate to 2. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's right. I have no qualms with that. I think 8 is I was on 8 for her and mm-hmm. She definitely was leaning towards 2 toward the end, which makes mm-hmm. sense with that mm-hmm. number in general.
Yeah.
What about Tahani?
Tahani.
I think this is like an obvious 3.
Yeah. Yeah, she's a 3.
She's like a walking stereotype of a 3.
She is. Yeah.
Oh. Guys, she totally leans towards growth, I think.
Mm-hmm. To 6?
Towards the end, to 6. Like, creating spaces for people, demonstrating loyalty towards others.
Yes.
Didn't she? She wanted to become an architect. An architect does is literally like, so my wife is a 6 and she loves throwing parties. Like, she's not even all that like social of a person, but she likes to step back and go, I did that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. look at all of these people who are together and enjoying themselves. And she is happy about that.
Yeah. I think Tahani, she lived her whole life just for herself. She was very self-focused. Mm-hmm. And also insecure. And then once she finally like reached that place where she started doing things outside of herself, she just wanted to build something. Like she didn't want to just pass on, you know, and not exist anymore.
Yeah.
She wanted to build something, which I do think is 6.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. How about Michael?
Michael.
The demon.
Michael is hard because he's a demon, but he also grows. I thought Michael was a 7. That
interesting.
Moved toward growth because if you remember, he starts out and he's just having a good time torturing them. Like he starts
yeah.
out.
Yeah. Yeah,
like
yeah, yeah.
he enjoys it and he created this whole like fantasy place where he could harm other people and torture them, mm-hmm. you know. And mm-hmm. and he likes it. So I don't know. It seemed to me just the idea of creating this whole world.
Okay.
So, I don't know.
I'm gonna throw this out there. Mm-hmm. I think maybe Michael is a 4.
That's what I was going to say.
Okay. Yeah. Because his whole thing of like creating and innovating this new thing. And then he also becomes very like sensitive and like emotional and
Like, well, if you look at the basic fear of a 4 is that they have no identity or personal significance. Mm-hmm. And you think about him as a demon who, like, the whole point of The Good Place is, like, the whole reason it existed is because he wanted to try something different. Like, he wanted to do a different thing and make a mark on – he, like, was trying
to – a legacy.
A legacy. It was all about legacy for him.
That is,
I don't know about.
Okay, yes, that does sound very, very convincing.
Yeah,
I don't know about growth to 1. I mean, did we see that play out?
Well, I mean,
he becomes a real boy.
I think so.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, what does it even look like to for a character on that show to grow to 1? I mean, that's a tough one.
Well, I mean, so he wanted to become a human.
Yeah.
Like, he wants to – he just wanted to be human. He doesn't want to be this eternal demon anymore.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
– I feel like it just feels like healthy for, right? Like
– Yeah.
More than growing to 1.
Yes.
It feels like – I want to be with you in this or something. You know?
Yeah, I want to be just normal, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the whole, and I want to have the whole integrity of the real experience, right? Of the
Totally. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. All right, here's another probably obvious one. Janet.
Is it obvious?
She's got to be a 2, right? Like, she has to be.
Oh, yeah.
Literally, she exists to give people the things they need.
She exists to serve and give people what they need.
Yeah, and she's very
pleasant. But she's programmed to be helpful, so that's what makes her hard to type.
Right, and over time, she grew to have actual emotions.
Robotically conditioned. Yeah. Oh,
and that's growth towards 4.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's true,
cool.
That's her.
I think case closed on that one.
Case closed. She's a 2.
I feel like Chidi's pretty easy too.
Okay, so with Chidi, I could not decide if Chidi was a 6 with a 5 wing or a 5 with a 6 wing.
That's fair. Yeah, that's fair.
Because he is 6. Extremely indecisive and fearful, but also he's this great thinker and researcher, and he was a professor, and you know.
I think it has to be 6 because his whole like integration for his character was learning to trust himself. He had all this knowledge and information, but he could not trust himself. He just was plagued by doubt. But then he becomes this confident, trusting person, which is like that's the whole thing for 6s.
Yeah, and growth towards 9, which is like vacation cheaty, right?
Relaxing, like
Man, I will tell you, I kind of wish the show had ended with the 2 episodes before where they were like, before the 2-part episode, I guess, where they were, he and, what's her name?
Eleanor.
Yeah. We're just sitting and watching the sunset, and it's like eternal. Like, that's so nice.
Yeah.
It's incredibly nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It really was. And yeah, he grew to be more decisive and confident and, able to really function in the world. Whereas, I think maybe you're right. 6 makes the most sense because he just seemed almost non-functional in his life on Earth.
Definitely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then to contrast that with how he was at the end when he was just so at peace, he was ready to move on. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Jason Mendoza.
Jason.
Okay. I found Jason hard because he does, I think he's a 9. And I say that.
Really?
I say that because, Walt Disney was a 9. who created this whole magical world, you know, for people. Also, mm-hmm. nines are not head types, right? They're body types. Yeah. And Jason doesn't seem to me like a head type. I really thought he was a nine because he sort of lives in this. He lives in his inner sanctum. He's always chill, always. Everything's always cool.
Good point. That's so true. I love that. Basic fear of loss and separation aligns with his dad story as well, I think.
Mm-hmm. He gets his dad back.
Does he integrate to three?
What was his arc? I'm trying to imagine what his arc is.
So, you know, the thing is, he's still the same throughout. It's just hard to say because I think out of all the characters, they do the least character development with him.
Yeah.
Out of all the other characters. So it's harder to see.
I think we have to use the Enneagram Institute's expertise for misidentifying sevens and nines. We agree it's either seven or nine, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Seven was my first thought.
Seven is my first instinct with him too.
I mean he is the most peaceful person on the planet. Like, I think you have a really good point. And this is a lot of text, so I don't really want to dig into this. I don't know. This is too much. But I read something on the nine page that sort of convinced me, which says, at their best, indomitable and all-embracing, they are able to bring people together and heal conflicts. Mm-hmm. Man, that feels like Jason to me.
Yeah.
Okay. Sevens are more active and self-assertive than nines. They tend to take initiatives, make plans, have multiple interests, and to provide the energy. Nines bring a sense of steadiness, support, and acceptance.
He's right there in the middle. Don't you think? It's tough.
Yeah, it's hard with him to tell.
Which of them would just throw a Molotov cocktail without thinking about it? I think we know the answer to that question. That's maybe not a useful question to ask. But.
Yeah. I could be convinced by nine, but then he also does just present so much as a seven. But
he does. Because
he just
thinking,
wants to have fun all the time and have new experiences and go to the football game. And
What is a seven go to in growth?
One.
Yeah, I don't really see that. No, wait, that's stress.
Oh, wait, stress. Is it
growth
four?
Is five.
They go to five. Five, right.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't see that.
I don't see that.
I don't see
him.
Either of those numbers in him.
Yeah. I think there's not enough character development in him.
You might be right about that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Or it's a genius version of a nine, because I kind of see nine in him a lot. Like, the more I'm thinking about it, he grows to three, I think is accurate, and in stress at six. I've seen some six in him when he's in stress. He's like worried about his girlfriend or Janet or whatever, you know?
Yeah. Not a girl, Janet.
So basically,
not a girl, Janet.
his big growth thing is that he was in that forest for thousands of years being an actual monk.
That's right.
He really was a monk. He was just waiting for Janet to come back. It took a couple Baramis. Mm-hmm. And
that's kind of weak. I'm with Karen on this. He got the short straw. I think they gave up on him a little bit.
But he's basically just a dumb character. Like, his whole role in the show is being an idiot, but a fun, lovable, entertaining idiot.
He's a pretty good idiot character, I guess.
He is.
If you look at it in that way. All right, sorry, nines. <or sevens>.
Yeah.
Your character is an idiot character.
He's so much of an idiot that we can't even type him.
exactly.
Confidently.
This has been No Chill Enneagram. It is hosted and produced by me, Richard Clark, and Bethany Perkins.
Theme music is 80s disco pop by Cinematic Alex. Our amazing logo and most of our awesome Instagram illustrations are by Matt Metcalf.
If you're highly integrated, consider supporting our Patreon. You have the bandwidth, and we think you'll love all of our extra bonus content. Just go to patreon.com/nochillpodcast to join.
If you're moderately integrated, hang in there. You got this. Just leave us a review in Apple Podcasts and then tell your friends about us so others can join you on your Enneagram journey.
If you're not integrated at all, we're sorry. You're probably that way because of all the time you spend on social media. So just follow us on Instagram at NoChillEnneagram or Twitter at NoChillEnneapod.
This is an Area Code Podcast.